Go. This is Cheryl McQuaid. I'm with the Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team. Today is January 23rd, 2006. It's approximately noon. We're at the greenhouse across the street from 602 Union Hall. We're preparing to interview Deborah Burpee. First, let's state the rest of the people in the room.
John Fedewa.
Jerry Smith.
And Gary, you're also here. Could you state your name and spell your last name?
Yeah, Gary Burpee. That's B-U-R-P-E-E.
And Deborah, could you state your name?
Deborah Burpee.
And what is your address?
6275 South M66 Highway, Nashville, Michigan, 49073.
And you two are married. Do you have children?
Not between us.
Could you give us a little bit on your educational background?
12th grade education.
And
that's it.
Did you spend any time in the military?
Nope.
Did you know about Fisher Body while you were growing up, before you went into the plant?
Yes, I did. I had a stepbrother that worked in the cafeteria.
Oh, really?
I remember dropping him off. Mom would bring us over here and drop him off so he could go to work.
And why did you decide Fisher Body was going to be your place of employment?
Because I'd already had two really low-class jobs, and I figured if I was going to work, I was going to work someplace that paid good money.
And so they paid good money?
Yeah.
And when did you put in your application at Fisher Body?
August of 76.
And when were you hired?
September of 76.
So pretty quick. Did you put your application in at the plant or at Michigan Employment Security?
At the plant.
At the plant?
Mm-hmm. We had to wait in a long line to get in here, and I got here pretty early in the morning because I was told there was going to be hiring a lot of women during that time period. But there weren't very many lined up out front. I just walked down the steps and got in.
So it wasn't a long line?
No.
And about a month later, you were hired?
Yep.
Do you remember your first day walking into the plant?
Oh, yeah, I do. I was scared to death. Especially walking down into the body shop where I hired in at. The guys weren't too happy to see you, and they treated you like a piece of meat. All the whistling and all the catcalls.
Tell us a little bit about your first job.
First job, I worked a body shop. They called it the jungle. Main line. I was welding in rocker panels. And learning that job was kind of hard because none of the guys wanted us there, and they didn't teach us the easy way to run these huge guns that we had to run. They just basically showed us what to do and handed us the guns.
How big were the guns?
Almost as big as I am.
They're big guns.
Yeah, they're big guns.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'9".
5'9".
Yeah.
And did you spend all your time in the body shop?
Yeah, until later when I got into material, I went up to trim for 6 weeks and then went back down into the body shop.
So just about your whole time there has been body shop.
Yep.
When you first hired into the body shop, what kind of atmosphere did you work in, other than the hostile men? What was it like walking into that body shop, the air quality,
It was pretty dusty. It stunk, especially welding. All you could smell is the fumes off the welders and the sealer burning, and it wasn't nice. It was dirty. It's a very dirty place.
Did you work around a lot of people?
Yeah, I did.
And was it easy to communicate with everybody? Or?
Some of them were easy to communicate with. Others treated you really bad. They didn't want you there. They didn't want to say anything to you. So the newer young people were good. The older people were bad. Even the supervisors didn't really like having a woman in their department.
So it sounds pretty rough hiring into the body shop.
It was.
And was it a hard job?
I thought it was hard because nobody taught me how to run the guns. I was fighting the guns because nobody told me that they glided right in. And after the first week, I almost quit because my hands hurt so bad, and I'd been so humiliated by the guys in there that I went home that Friday, and I really thought about it, and I decided that I wasn't going to let the men in the shop beat me. I was going to come back and play their game with them. So I started humiliating them back, and they started leaving me alone.
How did you humiliate them back?
I used their own magazines against them.
Oh, they had magazines.
Oh, yeah. And don't ask me why there was a Playgirl book in there. I had no idea, but there was a Playgirl magazine laying on one of their tables, and I just picked it up and started comparing them.
And that's what they would do.
They'd send pictures down the line on the front of the cars and stand there and gawk at me while I'm trying to run my job. I was pretty embarrassed. I was shy when I hired in. Not so shy now.
So, how long did you do that job?
Until I got bumped nights, which was about 2 weeks, and then I went into a different area, like on side frames, hanging parts. That was a lot better.
So, from day shift to night shift was even a lot better?
Yeah, because there was a younger crowd on night shift.
Okay.
So that wasn't as bad, and I'd already made up my mind that whatever they said to me, I was going to come back at them with something. And it wasn't nice, because you always had to stoop to their level with their dirty mouth and everything. So my mouth got pretty bad over the years. Trying to break that habit's not a good one.
Yeah, it is hard. What,
Go.
Deborah, could you tell me a little bit about the side frame area?
Yeah, while I was working in the side frame area, I worked a few different jobs. I had, I run the booking desk, where this area determines what style of car you're going to have, and it had big, humongous gates, so if you picked out the style of car you needed, you had to go over and change the gates out, take the one style out, put the style in you wanted, and then the next area that I worked in is you just go over there, and on the gate you knew what style it was because it had a certain number for a style on the gate. You just take that and you turn around, grab your parts off a monorail and load them in, and rockers and smaller parts were usually in a basket close to your job, and you'd load them in and just send it on down the line.
And then somebody else would put those pieces together. Gary.
Yeah, I'm Gary, and that gate was a fixture that was on wheels that would roll down the top of a beam, and that fixture was a fixture that had clamps from the start of it to the end of it, probably had 40, 50 clamps on it, and the clamps were for parts to be clamped in a certain sequence, like you'd start with a hinge plate, the hinge pillar, the roof rail, the, what was that?
Center pin.
No, I know, what was it? Lock, what do they call that? The centerpiece. I can't remember it now. But then the quarter panel, then the rear tail, then you'd have the door lock in the front, or in the middle section, and every one of the pieces had to be clamped in sequence and welded in sequence as they went down the line.
Well, so you would set up for the next operation.
Basically.
Yeah.
And then whatever you set up was what that vehicle was going to be the rest of the ride through the assembly.
That determined the style and the doors, either a coupe or a sedan.
Now, did you two meet in this area?
No, I was working on the weld line when I seen Gary and his brother hire in. I seen him walking down the line. And then he worked in an area, I can't remember exactly, but we'd always said hi to each other, and he only hired in a year after I did, so that's it till just recently.
Did you play any new hire initiation type pranks on him?
No. No, I was a girl. They'd get me.
We won't talk about the pranks. The buckets of water and the gas bags.
Oh, I did a lot of that stuff, too.
Were there a lot of pranks on the second shift
in
the body shop?
Both shifts.
Both shifts?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Little water fights.
What was the gas bags? Jerry Smith.
Yeah, I've never heard about gas bags.
Uh-huh. I probably better not say nothing about that. But anyway, that would go down that line, and everybody would weld in the parts as it went down the line, and then it would leave the side frames. Both side frames would leave the side frame area and come to the, they call it a marriage, or they both side frames would come together with the rear pan and the pan that was coming down the line. Then those gates would meet up and lock on, and they'd go through their process of welding the roof and the tulip fixtures and everything going on down the line. And when everything was welded, when it got back to the front of the line, those two gates, they had one guy on each side of the line that pulled gates, and what they'd do is they'd stick a hammer inside the car and have to physically pull every clamp on the gate to unlock the gate from the vehicle. Then when it got down to the end of the line, if those clamps were all unclamped, they had a fixture that would pull them gates off the car. And if somebody missed a clamp, that gate wouldn't come off, and it'd shut the line down, and you'd have to go down there and fix it. But when them gates, when them gates did come off, they'd go start the cycle all over again at the side frames where they'd load it up, and they'd just keep going around in circles.
And once all the gates came off, where did the car go after that?
Just kept on going down the line.
Around, and there was a pit area past that where they welded the wheel housing area in it. The pit was probably 12 foot by 4 foot wide.
And one person in the pit?
Usually in that area. But they had, four or five jobs they had to do under there, like welding, take this gun and weld way up over their head in the inside of the wheel housing and stuff. A couple other little areas they tacked with welds. But then it went around to put the little plate on the serial number, or whatever you want to call that number.
VIN plate.
Yeah, and then ended up going over to Weldline. And then they did their welding over there, like they welded the rockers, because everything was basically just held in place once everything clamped together. And they'd go over there and weld their rockers and the underbody together, and, you know, just different little things. And from, they just moved on down the line around.
And then once you left that area, where did you go then?
Well, I was in the body shop for 22 years, basically, before I went on material. So I worked all different areas in the body shop. I worked in underbody. I worked in side frames, front end sheet metal. And it all changed so much after the years. It was no more just putting it on a gate and sending it down to the next person. They usually, it ended up being like a back-end process where they put it on something and kind of bring it around. And I can't remember exactly that area and what, because I was up front then on how they sent those side frames around. I don't remember. But
was that about the time when the robots first started coming in? Or
yeah, basically the robots were there. Anyways, the back end of the car came up through the front end, and then we just put the fenders on and the deck lids, the hoods, and the roofs, and just start popping them together up there. I guess the rest of it must have been done back there in underbody. I wasn't sure about that part.
It's amazing how big the place is.
It is. It just goes through a whole bunch of different phases.
How did you find your way into the plant? Was that quite the job by itself?
Somebody show me out. When I was going out to the north lot, I got lost all the time, so I had to have somebody show me out to the north lot until I realized the south lot was a lot closer and I'd park there. And that was a lot easier. Just go down the main aisle and the escalator and out the tunnel.
Do you remember the wagons and what you did on some of your breaks back then?
For the wagons, it's only a 6-minute break. If you wanted anything off the wagon, that usually took your whole break, and then you had to eat your food while your line was running because you didn't have much time. It's either go to the bathroom or get something off the wagon. You didn't have a whole lot of time for the 6-minute break.
What did you do for lunches?
For lunches, I usually went to the cafeteria. Or went across the street to Harry's.
Did you have enough time to go across the street to
Harry's? A half hour, yeah. Yeah, it was a half-hour lunch. So, yeah, just go over there, order your food. You can usually call over there and order your food and have it waiting for you.
Oh, they took orders and excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did you ever see anybody get hurt in the body shop?
Oh, yeah, I did. I seen a guy named Amar that got hurt on the shuttle. That's where they had, it was like a lay-down side frame at that time. He didn't use his lockout procedures on locking anything out. He stepped up next to the shuttle and decided to move, and it took half of his, part of his leg off, his upper
thigh.
Amar
Brooks. We interviewed him.
Yeah. It took part of his, yeah.
And he told us about that, too.
Yeah.
Basically, when I found him over there, he was just wanting to stand up, and I'm trying to get him to sit down because it hadn't started bleeding yet, but you could see all the meat that had tore off that was on the rack. So I'm yelling somebody to call,
security,
and I says, I'm trying to get him to sit down. He wouldn't lay down. That's what I tried to do. So finally, I got him to sit on the edge of a basket, and then everybody else took over after that. Oh, yeah, I seen him get hurt. I also seen a guy get scalded by the hydraulic oil coming off one of the robots. It crystallized his T-shirt.
Oh.
Yeah, it was so hot coming out of there. So, other than just minor cuts and scrapes and bumps and, yeah. People are always getting hurt in there.
It's just a dangerous place to work. Was it unsafe? Or was it horseplay?
Oh, no, basically this was working. I had really never seen anybody get hurt goofing around. So, yeah, it was basically on the job. It's just they get their finger pinched somehow or hold their gun the way they weren't supposed to and they get pinched in one of the guns. Or if you were wet, you grab that trigger, you get a shock from it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from buckets of water being thrown around. They get hot in the summertime, and everybody decide a little horseplay. But the shock wasn't is really that bad off the guns.
Jerry Smith.
Yes, I'd like to go back to when you were saying that you and Gary met and got married. When did you actually get married and everything? How long did you go together, and was it a problem at work?
We actually just got married last April. We actually went together for probably a little over a year before we got married. So
you just knew each other in the plant,
yeah,
just friends?
Just always cordial to each other going back. In fact, the day he asked me out, I kind of looked at him dumbfounded. I mean, I never expected it. And I kind of drove away from him because I was in material at that time. I drove away from him and went down, I was sitting at the end of the line and working a crossword puzzle waiting for my next job, and he come down and told me he was serious. And me not knowing anything about his life, I thought he was still married, and I'm going, I'm sorry, I don't date married men, and he's going, sorry, our marriage is over. And I'm just looking at him, and he goes, we need to talk, so that's what we did. We just talked. That
sums it up.
Yeah, basically.
Sums it up.
Okay, now you said that you went into material. When did that happen?
No, just a minute here. I got to do the figuring here. About 8 years ago.
Yeah. And your first stunt with material was?
I worked in trim.
Trim being a tugger.
Being a tugger. Yeah, just had to load these two trailers on the back of this little vehicle we got to drive around, and you'd have to go around and pick up the cards off the racks that the people slid down so you knew what you needed, and you'd just go in their little supermarket area that they called it, and you'd pick up all your parts and you'd deliver it back to the location and start all over again.
And you said that you worked so hard doing that job, you ate and lost the weight.
I lost 10 pounds.
Very
in 6 weeks. Yeah. It's a lot of lifting, a lot of running. In fact, my modules And I can't tell you exactly what that is, except for some brain to an area that they needed. And I had, there was only like 8 of them in a box. And that was my busiest area, trying to hurry up and fill that up so I could go make sure nobody else ran out of stock. And I'd have to add extras, stack them extra high just so I could get through there and go to another area. That was a busy area.
And you did that for 6 weeks?
6 weeks.
What kind of training process did you have to go through to become a truck driver in there?
Oh, they take you through a material training, and it's a safety class telling you how to run the truck, and, well, they had showed you how to use the forklift, every lever on it, and basically made you sit here and practice for, it was a whole weekend that I, that was a two-day weekend that I took the class, and actually, there was no really big safety rules when I took it 8 years ago other than to watch for traffic, watch for people, and just be careful how you stack. That was it.
And did they start getting more strict on their safety with truck driving, or is that how it was basically when the plant closed?
Oh, they started getting a little stricter. They always took us down and they started showing us videos of people getting run over by fork trucks and all the accidents, or stock toppling over because it wasn't being stacked right, or somebody being too big a hurry and pulling out too fast. And they made a few changes there, but basically the old people just drove the way they wanted to anyways, because we had a few people in there that would drink and drive. And actually, one guy was hurt somebody, and he jumped off his truck and ran, and as long as they didn't catch him on the truck, they couldn't burn him for drinking and driving.
And he had been drinking.
Yeah, he'd already lost his license outside. And that was one of our big issues, is we couldn't figure out if he had a license, didn't have a license outside of here, how he could have a license inside to drive a fork truck. So, yeah, there was some that would still run the way they wanted to. Others of us just slowed down and did our job.
Did you feel that the training that you were given was enough? Was that adequate to be able to perform your job in the plant? Or did you feel that maybe you needed more training?
Probably needed more training, because I was a little slow at first when it come to stacking stuff way up over my head. I was still really leery on putting stuff up above my head and trying to stack, especially these huge racks that were probably, 12, 14 feet wide, and you have to take a shovel on it to hold these big rings, the side of these rings. They were huge. And then you had to shovel them up here, and there's like a gate where all this monorails run above your head, and you have to get it between the gate and this, or between the top of another rack and a sprinkler system. We didn't always make it. We kind of popped heads off sprinklers. And
what happened when you did that?
Soaking wet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A lot of people would get soaking wet.
And did anybody get fired for that? Or?
No. Actually, in certain areas back where I was, there wasn't enough clearance, because you were supposed to have so many inches clearance between the top of your rack and the ceiling or the pipes, and they didn't always have the clearance we needed, so it was kind of hard to fire anybody for that, because they were breaking one of their own rules.
Deborah, I kind of jumped the gun here, and I really want to go back to Amer Brooks and you finding him in the shape that he was in. What did that do? I mean, how did you feel about that?
Well, it made me a little more cautious about being around the shuttle. I mean, I knew what he did was wrong when he stepped in there without using his lockout procedure that they were supposed to use. And then I know that he thought he could just get in there and lay this rail right back in there without being touched, but in the process he didn't know what the people down at the other end, when they were going to hit the buttons when they got all their parts loaded in. So it made me a little more leery about being around it.
So do you think that he did that on purpose?
Hurt himself? No.
It was just unfortunate.
Yeah, it was very unfortunate. even though he made a joke out of it later. He called us back and asked us who got the bacon off the shuttle that he left behind.
Gary.
Yeah, lockout procedure in that place was obviously corporate policy, but many times you would see where management would more or less tell people, we can't have the line shut down. So wouldn't come right out and say, don't use the procedure, but basically would discourage people from doing it.
So if you can do it without using shutting down that line.
Exactly. And there's many of people who got hurt in there by doing that, and they felt pressured by the company not to lock something out. It happened all the time. And the only time they'd ever come back hard on the workers and try to enforce their policy was obviously when somebody got hurt.
It's like their little pull cord system. You had a certain area to get your job done. If you couldn't do it, you'd pull that cord, and you'd have to try to fix it. And somebody was supposed to come down to help you to fix it once you pulled your cord. But the car would stop after it reached a certain area if it wasn't fixed in station. Everybody got their rear ends chewed over stopping the line. But that was supposed to happen. That's what that was set up for. If you couldn't do your job and do it right, you're supposed to pull the cord for help. And we didn't always get the help, but we got chewed out a lot. That's why a lot of things would, if they didn't show up, you pull the cord, you just take a marker and mark on the side of the car and send it down the line.
Don't shut that line down.
Yeah, basically. That's what we were being told. And...
well, that was drilled in you from the beginning.
Yeah.
The day you hired in, it was drilled into you. Do not shut the line down for any reason. I seen them drag people off the line that had heart attacks. Just drag them out of the way and keep the line, just to keep the line running.
I always heard about that.
It happened.
Never saw
it. It happened. So.
Yep.
What would you say was your best job in there, in Fisher Body?
Material.
You enjoyed driving the truck?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, the guys didn't want us to do it, so they wouldn't tell us how easy it was. They'd always tell us all their aches and pains.
I had my back.
Oh, yeah. You have a lot of back problems and, you know, neck problems and stuff like that. But once us women found out how easy it was, we started telling the other women. It's a good job. You better get on it.
So it wasn't hard trying your back, your neck?
No. Well, you'd end up a little, your neck a little bit, but I didn't think my back hurt, except for sitting all day. If you sit so long, your back's going to hurt. But no, I didn't have them problems. I still don't.
Do you have a favorite supervisor in there?
Do I have a favorite? I had
or
a lot of
you?
Favorites. We had a lot of favorites.
You didn't have a problem working with management team?
Not really. There was a couple that I really didn't like. One was the old sourpuss when I first hired in, Earl Sattler. He never smiled, and you didn't know if he's going to bite your head off from one minute to the next.
Is that a screamer?
No, he just lectured you a lot. But he actually wasn't as bad as you thought just by looking at him. He was actually a nicer man. But, yeah, he lectured you, but he always looked like he was going to bite. And then his opposite was great. Ray Prowse, he was fantastic. But I had a lot of good supervisors. I mean,
Walt Beach
and Don Ray and
he was a screamer.
Dick Thomas. No, Walt was all. He was a blowhard. But Dick Thomas, I mean, I had a bout with Dick Thomas and we settled it, but he was a good supervisor. I mean, anything he asked for, he'd try to get if it was in his power. But I really haven't had any bad supervisors until I got into it with his supervisor. I didn't like his supervisor.
What did your supervisor do to her, Gary?
Ask her.
He tried to get me banned out of the area because somebody had a girl working across from him. And she had to be the center of attention. And if she wasn't center of attention, she started trouble. So her and the boss become like this. They tried to get me banned from going in the area. And it didn't work. And then no matter what happened, we got that issue settled. But no matter what I did about going into that area, he had a fit. Like I left the gate open too long. Or I, you know, he started taking things out on material, period. Not just me. Because he couldn't get away with it with me. But he'd start causing trouble for material. And now he's material supervisor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you remember, in trim, when back in the 70s, the lines were together, A and B line.
Mm-hmm.
Was it like that in the body shop?
No, actually. Well, I think they kind of both ended up going together. Well, they didn't join. There was always A line and B line. But the way they went around in there, it was like a big jigsaw puzzle. They just wound in and out of each other over there. So, that wasn't bad. I mean, we always knew where we were going. They run right next to each other, you know, basically.
I only worked in the body shop for a very short time, and I thought it was kind of like half the building was one and half the building was the other.
Kind of segregated, they still had their own individual areas.
Yeah.
Speaking of segregation, did you notice any racial problems, any other than, well, you already told us a little bit about the harassment issues. Anything else that you remember that you'd like to share with us on all that?
Not so many racial problems. There were a lot of black people always trying to hit on the white women in there. And you just had to tell them the way it was, and they basically left you alone. So I don't see any other racial problem. I didn't pay too much attention to it. As long as they left me alone, I was fine.
Was there very much music in the plant, in the body shop?
Yeah, we all had a lot. When we were working on the line, we usually had a radio sitting close by. Somebody always played a radio. It contributed to the noise, but it was a better noise than the noise you got to listen to.
The banging.
Yeah.
And what about dinners? Did you have dinners
there? Yeah, all the departments had dinners on birthdays, or not so much birthdays, but on holidays or retirements. Yeah, they all had dinners.
Who would usually set that all up, or?
Usually the intermittent relief man, and then it went to the first-time build man, or if they didn't want to do it, they usually pick somebody off the line and they'd run their job. And
so it's that person you go around and talk to?
Yeah.
Did you participate in those?
Oh, yeah.
Was it the type of thing where they would tell you what to bring, or would you bring a favorite dish from home? Or?
They'd ask you what you wanted to bring, and usually you'd ask them what they needed. Some areas probably told you what to bring. We didn't have a problem with that downstairs. You usually brought what you wanted to.
Do you remember when they changed the plant from smoking to a non-smoking plant?
Yeah.
And what was the attitude of people? It's hard to talk for someone else. But what did you think the attitude was in the body shop?
Well, I figured the people decided they were going to do what they wanted to do, because I've seen a lot of them hiding cigarettes and stand over. They'd run to the material area where the stock was up, and they'd sit there and get their cigarettes, or they'd run down in the train well where they thought nobody was looking. And they'd smoke their cigarettes, or there was a lot of them that would go out back and smoke just outside the door, but it still didn't help because it all came right back in at us. And we couldn't wait for them to get break areas. But yeah, I seen a lot of people still smoking in there. They would just cup their cigarette and kind of keep it down to their side, and if they seen a boss, they'd just smash it or drop it or just go about their business.
Did you ever see anybody get reprimanded for smoking in when they weren't supposed to be?
Yeah, I did. They were told if they were caught again, they'd probably be fired.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you very involved in the union?
No.
Did you? You didn't go to union meetings?
Mm-mm.
Voting?
No. I voted, but I didn't go to the union meetings.
Voting's important.
Yeah, I voted. Oh, in fact, I had my book. Well, they give you their little paper pamphlets that they wanted you to read, but it didn't have all the facts in it, so you still didn't know what you were voting for.
Mm.
You know?
What is your most appreciated bargain benefit?
My most appreciated bargain benefit. No, that's a good one. Well, since I'm so close to retirement, I think it would be my pension.
That's a good one.
And my medical.
A lot of people, well, we're known for being capital quality. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas why we are what we are? What made us that?
The capital of quality? Because we all cared about our own jobs. Our quality actually didn't really start going down until we ended up with a lot of those people transferring from Flint. When they shut down that one plant, we ended up with a whole bunch of people here. That's when I thought our quality started going down, because those people really didn't care.
They didn't have the work ethic?
I don't think they did. And a lot of us noticed that.
They're building a new plant for us. You'll be going to the new plant. Will you be in the material department?
Yep.
What, can you give us any thoughts you may have about leaving this plant, going to a new one?
Well, I just wish I could have retired out of this one. Because this is the plant I hired in at. And I mean, it's like I wanted to change the look. I mean, somebody asked me where I work, I write Fisher Body. I don't write GM or LCA or anything like that. It's Fisher Body. I don't know what I'm going to write over there. But I have a few things about going over there. I mean, your material, you sit on a truck all day. You're constantly sitting there waiting for your next job. I don't know how it's going to be over there and how they got them set up. But they're telling you you can't read, you can't drink. I mean, you can't basically get off your job. I carry a bottle of water everywhere I go because I drink a lot of water. I don't know how their rules are going to be. And I'm not very much for change. I'm set in my ways. I like this job. And I did my job. I don't want nobody to bother me if I do my job. I just want to do what I do. And if that means sitting there reading a book while I'm waiting for the next job, it's not hurting nobody, and I'm not getting behind on my job, so I should be left alone.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
This is an awesome interview. I want to thank you very much. Is there anything that you'd like to share with us that we didn't ask you?
No, other than I think the jobs bank shouldn't have been there in the first place. Because basically the way I see it is, they gave a lot of young people a chance just to sit and do nothing and earn money that they shouldn't have had. Because if that would have been us years ago, we would have not been sitting in the jobs bank. We'd have been out on the streets looking for another job.
It's cost them a lot of money.
It has cost. And that's a lot of profit sharing that they could probably gave to us that we didn't even get. And they're saying they're not making a profit, but yet the sales are up. And, you know, you just don't know. It's like they take our money and build a new plant, and then they say they don't have the money to pay you. So the stories you hear in here, you know, they drive you crazy because you know they're making a profit. They wouldn't be building the cars. And you know all the overtime you work, so they've got to be building something. They've got to be making money somewhere. So that was my biggest thing is about the job spin. I know I'm sitting in it now, and I'm enjoying it, but it's about time. But basically, they'd be out on unemployment, waiting for this new plant to start. And that's the way that should have been. It's they're holding on to all these kids for all these years. They could have been looking for a job somewhere else. I think they were wrong. I mean, what's this teaching them? You can sit here and do nothing and earn this money. Why should I go to work? And so when you get them in here, what kind of quality are you going to have? Because they've already got seniority. And they're not going to do what you want them to do because they didn't have to for so many years.
Thank you, Deborah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary.